With SDPB News, I'm Jackson Dirks. Construction of Phase 1 of the Minnehaha County Juvenile Justice Center is nearing completion. The $50 million project replaces the current Juvenile Detention Center. The new Juvenile Justice Center, or JJC, is supposed to meet the county's needs for the next 30 years. The current facility has a 40-bed maximum and serves 30 youth daily. The JJC increases bed capacity to 64. Jamie Gravett is director of the existing Juvenile Detention Center. He says in addition to more beds, the space is going to promote a safer environment for youth.
Believe it or not, if I have two kids that come in that were shooting at each other, right now I have to put them in the same hallway. Now I can put one on that half of the building, and I can put one on that half of the building, and they'll never see each other.
Another safety feature added are three padded cells. That helps prevent suicidal and other at-risk juveniles from harming themselves. Currently, JJC staff have to place youth into a restraint chair to protect them from self-harm. Gravett says the new cells create the opportunity to keep both parties out of harm's way.
I think it's great because I have scars on my body from having to deal with that. I've seen my staff get concussions quite frequently. I've seen kids get hurt accidentally while we're trying to deal with them. So if we can do anything to prevent having to go hands-on, I'm all for it.
The next phase includes transferring operations into the new building. Once juvenile detainees are fully transferred, the existing center will be demolished. In its place, a new juvenile courtroom and support offices are being built. Gravett says that's going to streamline operations.
It reduces the number of transports that we have to do downtown for court. Transporting can be very dangerous for the staff and the youth. We could get in a car accident. Someone could find out where we're at and come and try and attack us. So we want to eliminate as many of the transports as we can.
He adds that's important.
Realistically, most of our kids are decent kids. They just got caught up in something really stupid. And now they're going to go through the court system, and they're going to get the help they need to get back on track.
The next phase is set to begin this fall and wrap up next winter. Demand for after-school programming is massive across South Dakota. However, new data shows that demand nearly doubles the actual amount of programming available. SDPB's CJ Keen has more.
Data from the most recent America After 3 p.m. survey found significant demand for after-school programming in South Dakota, but barriers like money, availability, and location are locking some families out. Billy Mawinney is the executive director of the South Dakota After-School Network. He says after-hours programming is a meaningful investment for the state to consider.
What they found is 8 out of 10 increase in reading, 9 out of 10 students increase in their math scores, and 100% of the students reduced behaviors. And that's comparing students in the program versus students not in the program in 1 year.
However, he understands the challenges of implementation.
We all know that budgets are tight and investments are tough, right? We know what that looks like, and we know everyone is having a hard time, I would say, especially when we look all across the country. But there's never a better investment than in families right now.
He says in addition to improved test scores, investing in after-school programming reduces both juvenile crime rates and increases production in the workplace for parents who don't have to leave work early to take care of their children. Mawinney says the solution will take state and local buy-in and parents working with districts and their kids.
The solution is an everyone issue. It's an economic issue, right? People, youth care and child care workers show up to work so everyone can go to work. And so it's a cyclical problem that an entire community must dive in to do.
The data found more than 64,000 South Dakota families are looking for programs, but only 21,600 are actually enrolled in after-school programming. I'm SDPB's CJ Keen.
On Thursday, the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe had a government-to-government consultation with the United States Department of Agriculture. Peter Lenkeek is chairman of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. He called on USDA leadership to protect funding of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, and programs for women, infants, and children, or WIC.
We at the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, Crow Creek Sioux Reservation, we have an 85% unemployment rate with a life expectancy of 45 years old. The proposed $30 billion cut to SNAP and the reductions to WIC would have devastating consequences for my people. The Crow Creek Sioux Tribe already faces high in food security and limited retail access. These programs are the backbone of public health and family stability within these rural tribal communities. We urge USDA to oppose or mitigate these proposed cuts.
He discussed many other issues, including protecting treaties, holding workforce reductions affecting tribes until they can be consulted, and programs for beginning farmers. You can find a link to Chairman Langkeek's remarks at sdpb.org/news. Saturday marks the beginning of traditional pheasant season for South Dakota. For the 2025 traditional pheasant season, the daily limit is 3 roosters. Possession is limited to 15 overall at 3 birds a day. Shooting hours begin at 10 a.m. Central, 9 Mountain, and end promptly at sunset. South Dakota is a destination for bird hunters with its rolling hills and abundant public lands for hunting opportunities. In turn, the economics of pheasant hunting shows how bird season can sustain some small towns. Game Fish and Parks tallied 82,000 non-resident hunters came for the 2024 season, and well over $300 million was spent by hunters last year. South Dakota's leading engineering school has once again been ranked among the nation's top universities. The Wall Street Journal named South Dakota Mines in the 2026 edition of America's Best Colleges. That ranking includes value to student for cost, degree completion rates, and graduates moving on to postgrad or high-salary career. Additionally, Mines was listed in the Forbes Top Colleges 2026 Top 500 nationwide at number 363. The longtime auditor for Pennington County announced her retirement this week. Cindy Moeller has held the job for more than 25 years and will step away in early November. The Pennington County Board of Commissioners made the announcement this week and thanked her for her service to citizens of the county. This retirement creates a vacancy for the auditor office. Law dictates that local county board is responsible for appointing and filling the vacancy for the remainder of Moeller's term. That term expires March 1st, 2027, and county auditor will next be on the ballot during the 2026 election cycle. South Dakota's high school seniors are scoring above the national average on their ACT scores. Nationwide, the average student will finish with a score of 19.4. In South Dakota, however, the 2025 class averaged a score of 21. That number has declined for both the country and South Dakota, though not as dramatically in the state. In total, 60% of South Dakota's 2025 graduates took the standardized college admission exam. Statewide, 29 students scored a perfect 36 in English and 64 hit the mark in reading. Beginning in 2026, all public school juniors will take the ACT as part of their state assessments. Rapid City's economy continues to develop as the first 8 months of 2025 yield significant sales tax returns for the community. For January through August, the most recently tallied data, the total is 3.18% higher than last year. That's about $1.82 million, according to City Hall. Further, for the months of June through August, the city set a record for a three-month summer period, surpassing 2024's numbers by $1 million. In that time, Rapid City brought in just over $25 million. It reflects a larger trend of economic growth the city has experienced since 2020, when a retraction was experienced. Since May of 2020, collections have consistently increased in 60 out of the 63 available months. Many tribes have restored bison to their lands, but they're still working to turn it into a valuable food source, especially one that could nourish hungry kids. Reporter Nancy Averett visited Rapid City to learn how indigenous food advocates are teaming up with native schools to get buffalo on the menu.
Lisa Ironcloud grew up poor. The Oglala Lakota woman moved frequently, and meals consisted of the cheapest things in the grocery store: hot dogs, chips, and soda, or prepackaged food from the Federal Food Distribution Program on Indian reservations.
Like the way I grew up, I ate a ton of processed foods because that's what we could afford, you know, a lot of lunch meat. But there were also times where we didn't eat.
Ironcloud is part of the growing Indigenous food sovereignty movement, which calls for tribes to build their own food systems based on the diets of their ancestors. She and others believe getting more indigenous foods into native schools is key to combating the high rates of disease and mental health challenges on reservations. They especially want to see bison, a culturally important protein, on school lunch menus. This summer, Ironcloud joined other members of the movement, along with tribal school administrators, cooks, and nutritionists, at a gathering in South Dakota. It was the first ever Buffalo to School Conference. Get your yogi Heather Dawn Thompson, a citizen of the Cheyenne River Sioux, is one of the organizers.
Folks have been dreaming about this moment for probably decades, frankly, to try and get healthier foods into their student lunches and to get buffalo on the menu.
On a ranch south of Rapid City, gusty winds flatten the prairie grasses. Participants grip portable coffee mugs. Some wear brightly colored Lakota ribbon skirts. A hush falls over the group of about 50 people when a red pickup truck pulls into view with a 1,200-pound, recently killed male buffalo dangling from a hoist on the back. A group of men wrestle the carcass onto a metal harvesting rack. Then Ironcloud, who has spent the last decade learning how to butcher and cook buffalo, encourages attendees to grab a knife and give it a try.
Feel free to jump in there and make a cut. Along the way, as we break it down, we'll identify and talk about how it's used, how you cook it, and how you prepare it for storage.
She tells them to focus their knife tips on the lines of fat crisscrossing the meat and offers tastes of the heart and stomach and cooking advice. Cheek meat is great for tacos, and intestines can be sliced and boiled and eaten like pasta. Beneath their excited chatter hummed a 16-foot refrigerated trailer, which can be taken directly into the field for harvesting up to 4 buffalo at a time. The trailer was part of the Biden administration's USDA investment in tribal food sovereignty.
That support is drying up under the Trump administration. The USDA was supposed to sponsor the conference, but the agency pulled out in January.
Heather Dawn Thompson, who's also with the World Wildlife Fund, says her organization and others stepped in to make up the funding.
It's been a really challenging year for a lot of folks with the federal government changing their plans mid-contract and mid-agreement, including the USDA.
Several food service workers in attendance said part of their goal was learning to use more parts of the buffalo. In the past, they'd mostly stuck to ground buffalo meat for burgers, chili, or tacos, hoping kids raised on beef might not notice the difference. Crystal Northcutt is director of food services for Fort Washakie Schools on the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming. She says another reason she came was to connect with native buffalo producers.
I have served it once before, but I bought it from Cisco, but looking for a different source so that you know where it's coming from and you get the traditionalness of it. And so, yes, I'm trying to bring back healthier food for our kids.
Lisa Ansel Frazier is the founder of the nonprofit Buffalo Youth Nation Project. The organization does after-school programming focused on indigenous foods in 5 states. She says she wants to learn about butchering so she can hold buffalo harvests at the schools she serves.
We're going more the traditional way of harvest for our schools and bringing in education for the children to be like, okay, this is what we did before processing plants. This is the traditional method of using and harvesting and obtaining nutrition.
By noon, the buffalo that had been roaming the ranch earlier that morning was now sealed up in dozens of plastic freezer bags. Half would be donated to a girls' school on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. As the harvest wound down, organizers cleaned and tore down the butchering area. Then Ironcloud crawled into a pickup with her husband Arlo and their son and daughter. Then they headed down the dirt road that led to the highway, with dust billowing up from their tires and boxes of bones rattling in the back. I'm Nancy Averett.
This report is supported by a grant from the Institute for Journalism and Natural Resources. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks, and that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SDPB News and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. And as always, thanks for listening.